Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Beneath the Willow by Kenna White, narrated by Abby Craden. Chapter 1. The door to exam room number 2 opened, and a woman strode out. She jotted some notes in the patient's folder before handing it to the nurse who met her in the hall. She then took the folder from the pocket on the door to examine room 3, and read the lab report clipped to the front. The 38-year-old woman wore a pair of black slacks and a peach-colored silk blouse under her white lab coat. A stethoscope was draped around her neck, and her name was embroidered in script letters over the breast pocket, Dr. Paris E. Demont. Her shoulder-length blonde hair was artistically French braided and held by tortoiseshell clips on either side. Her makeup was thin and nearly unnecessary over a clear but pale complexion and pleasingly full lips. She had strict posture to accompany her professional demeanor, softened only by her pale blue eyes. Her forehead furrowed as she studied the lab report and unfolded the EKG readout. After leafing through several pages, she opened the door and disappeared inside. 10 minutes later, she reappeared and closed the door behind her. "Carly, can you reschedule Mrs. Stecklenburg's CT for sometime next month?" Paris asked as she made a note in the folder, then added it to the stack at the nurse's station. "I practically had to promise my firstborn child just to get the one she has," the nurse scowled. "Is there a problem with the 14th?
"She will be out of the country," Paris replied. "She's taking a cruise. I guess her palpitations are better. See if you can schedule it for sometime after the 1st of the month. In fact, see if you can swap appointments with Mr. Petrino. I didn't like the looks of his echo this time."
"Angiography Suite 2 won't be available tomorrow. The hospital called and said they moved you to Suite 4 at 6:30 in the morning. Something about a leak in the ceiling."
"Did you call Mrs. Romano to let her know her appointment is earlier?"
"Yes," Carly reported.
"Paris."
A gray-haired man in a lab coat and thick glasses stepped out of an exam room at the end of the hall.
"Do you remember the name of that doctor we met at the conference a few months ago? The cardiologist from Seattle?"
"Osborne," she replied, still studying a stack of lab reports. "And Bill, he was from Tacoma, not Seattle."
"Thanks,"
he replied, ducking inside his office and closing the door. "Mr. Burns?" she asked Carly, nodding her head toward the exam room Bill had just left.
"Yes," she whispered. "His CT just came back."
Carly shook her head sympathetically.
"And he's being transferred to Seattle in 2 weeks."
Paris turned her attention back to the stack of lab reports. When she finished with them, she looked up at Carly and raised her eyebrows. "Who's next?"
"Believe it or not, you are officially finished for the day."
"You're kidding." Paris checked her watch. "It is only 5:15. Are you sure you don't have someone hidden in an exam room somewhere? Someone with a big stack of lab reports and x-rays to read? Someone who has been waiting since noon?"
"Nope, not a one."
Carly took a message from her desk and handed it to Paris.
"You do have a phone message from someone named Malcolm Vetch. He said he is your property manager and was calling about your house in Banyan, somewhere or other."
"Missouri," Paris inserted, reading over the message.
"Yeah, Missouri. Do you know him?"
Carly asked cautiously.
"Yes, Malcolm and I know each other."
Paris grimaced as she continued to read.
"He was very insistent you return his call before the weekend. Something about repairs that couldn't wait."
"So what's new?"
Paris mumbled to herself.
"Is it something I could help you with, Dr. Demont?"
Carly asked with concern.
"I'll be glad to handle it if you tell me what you want me to say."
"Thanks, Carly, but I can handle it."
Paris patted the nurse's hand and gave an understanding smile. Paris knew her nurse was trying to help. It was something she had been doing since 9/11. Something all the nurses and doctors in Paris's office had been doing since the World Trade Center collapsed and turned Paris's life into an empty, sterile existence. It had been over 5 years, but her friends and colleagues continued to stand guard over Paris's life until they felt she was ready to handle it alone. She appreciated their concern, their friendship, but she had learned to carry on in spite of the huge void Gabby's death left in her life. Gabriella Buttici had been Paris's own personal spark plug, a woman who had talked, smiled, laughed, jogged, danced, worked, teased, and loved her way through 35 years of life until the insanity of that horrifying day snuffed out her enormous energy. Their 8 years together had barely scratched the surface of their life's potential. Paris pocketed the message
and headed for her office. She spent the next 2 hours dictating her charts and reviewing test results for tomorrow's patients. She didn't mind spending her evenings at the office. It was something she had found herself doing more and more. More hours at work meant fewer hours at home or out in the streets where people lived in vibrant and enthusiastic New York City. Paris had never liked the rush hour traffic or the congestion. She had always preferred the more quiet hours before or after the normal rush hour commutes. Since 9/11, she subconsciously avoided Lower Manhattan or any of the streets and highways that offered a view of the vacant Battery Park skyline. Paris was thankful for her hectic and busy work schedule. Her office door opened slowly after a knock.
"Hey, Paris, you still at it?"
Bill asked, his tie now loosened and his shirt collar open.
"Getting late."
"Almost finished. Last chart."
"You're putting in a lot of time, Paris. You need to pace yourself. You can't keep coming in first and leaving last and still be on top of your game. Who's on call this weekend?"
"You are." Paris gave a small grin.
"Oh yeah, I am, aren't I?"
"As a matter of fact, after tomorrow, I have 4 days off."
"Well, goddamn, Paris DeMont, doctor of cardiology to Manhattan's elite, is actually taking 4 whole days off? I don't believe it. It must be a mistake. Alert the Times."
Bill waved his hands dramatically across the air as if this news was worthy of print. "Fine, have your little joke. Make fun of me." Paris leaned back in her leather desk chair and crossed her hands in her lap. "But who was the one who handled that collapsed stent at 3 a.m. for you last month? And who cut short a meeting in Dallas to cover your patients so you could attend Marianne's midterm graduation? And who put in a 24-hour shift covering 2 hospitals over Christmas so you and Joe could take your wives to Atlantic City to overeat and over-imbibe?" Bill removed his glasses and cleaned them on his tie.
4 days does not a vacation make, my dear doctor."
"I'm fine, but thanks for the concern."
"If you need some time off, just let me know, okay?"
he offered. "I will, Bill."
"How long have I been telling you that?"
"Oh, about 5 years.
"Go home, Paris. Go out to dinner. Go to the movies. Go to the beach. Go on a trip that has absolutely nothing to do with medicine."
"Go home, Bill. Vera has your dinner ready." He returned her smile and closed the door behind him, leaving Paris with an empty clinic and her lonely ride home. She hung her white lab coat on the brass coat rack behind the office door. She retrieved the telephone messages and her pager from the pockets before turning off the lights and closing the door. She walked the long hall of exam rooms, navigated the route through the lab, the nurse's station, and the waiting room, turning off lights and closing doors until she was locking the clinic door imprinted with the names Dr. Paris DeMont, Dr. William Hayes, and Dr. Joseph Corelli, Manhattan Cardiology Associates.
"Good evening, Dr. DeMont,"
offered a small black man with graying hair. His navy blue uniform shirt and matching pants were neatly pressed, the shirt buttoned to the neck and his black work shoes polished to a brilliant shine. "Hello, Mr. Williams," she replied fondly. "How's your wife doing?"
"She's much better, thank you. That's nice of you to ask."
He stopped his janitorial cart outside her office door.
"You're looking lovely this evening, Dr. D."
"Thank you, Mr. Williams." Paris patted his shoulder. "You're looking pretty dapper yourself." He smiled shyly as he unlocked her office, then pushed his cart through her door. "Good night, Mr. Williams." Paris waved as she headed for the elevator.
"Good night, doctor. You take care of yourself now."
A taxi pulled up in front of a white granite-fronted apartment building on West 74th Street, where a doorman opened the back door and offered Paris a hand.
"Good evening, Dr. DeMont,"
the doorman acknowledged. "Hello, Mike." Paris hurried through the front door and into the elevator. Inside her 9th-floor, 2-bedroom corner apartment, she stepped out of her shoes and pressed the button on the answering machine. As it chirped and beeped through its playback cycle, she set her briefcase on the end table and draped her jacket over the back of the couch.
"Hello, Paris, dear. This is your mother. Why haven't you called me this week? Are you all right, sweetheart? Do you need some of my chicken soup?
Call me. I'll be home after 7:30. I'm going to visit Madeline Hunter in the hospital. She had a knee replacement yesterday, and I told her I would come by this afternoon. Thank you, sweetheart, for the DVD player you sent me for my birthday. The gals are all jealous. I'm sure I can figure out how to use it. Give your mother a call. Bye."
Paris smiled at her mother's voice. Liz DeMont telephoned Paris once a week as regular as clockwork. She and Paris's father had moved to Florida the year after Paris graduated from medical school so he could play golf year-round. When he died from pancreatic cancer 2 years later, Liz decided the Florida climate was more to her liking than New York's weather, so she stayed. She now had a circle of friends, mostly widows, who played bridge, shopped the malls, ate long lunches at every cafe within 20 miles of Vero Beach, and gossiped about each other's families. The machine beeped again.
Hello, Miss DeMont. This is Malcolm Vetch. I've been trying to get a hold of you about your house in Banyan. It's vacant again, and before I can make it available for rent, there are some repairs we need to make. The kitchen sink needs a new faucet. Couple light fixtures need replacing. Several of the balusters are dangerously weak and need replacing, and there isn't any hot water coming from the hot water tank. It probably has a rusted tank, and we'll need to get a new one. There are some sub-flooring problems in the back of the house also. I have to do a thorough inspection tomorrow, and there may be more. Looks like the old house is showing its age, and I'm sure I can get it back in shape.
Paris changed into a robe and went into the kitchen to make a salad for dinner. Before she could finish eating, the telephone rang, Liz DeMont's name flashing across the caller ID.
Hello, Mother, Paris said and quickly swallowed her bite.
Paris, dear, how are you? How's New York? How's the practice?
Liz didn't seem to need answers to her questions. To ask them seemed sufficient.
Fine, Mother. Everything's fine. How are you? How's your cold?
Oh, you know me. A cold one minute, fine the next. Everyone in the bridge club has something. We just pass it around.
She laughed and coughed.
But I'll be better when my daughter tells me she's coming to Vero Beach to see her mother. It has been ages and ages, you know.
It's been 3 months. I came down for Christmas and for your birthday.
3 months is ages for an old woman like me.
She coughed again, then blew her nose.
You aren't old, Mother.
If you say so, dear. Let's talk about you. How have you been, Paris, really?
Have you been taking care of yourself?
I'm fine, Mother. Bill sends his best. He always asks about you.
He is a very nice man. His wife is a lovely woman.
Yes, he is. They both are very kind. There was a silence. Each of them knew that Bill Hayes and his wife being kind people was a direct reference to their selfless concern for Paris after 9/11 and Gabby's death.
So, dear, have you been seeing anyone?
Liz asked. No, Mother, Paris said quietly.
But, sweetheart, it has been...
Mother, please.
Okay, not another word about it from me.
I got a call from Malcolm Vetch, Paris offered.
Malcolm Vetch? Who's Malcolm Vetch?
He owns a property management company that is handling the house in Banyan for me.
Do you still own that old thing? I thought you got rid of it years ago when Mother passed away.
No, I kept it for a tax shelter. He has been handling the renters for me. It has been costing me quite a bit in repairs over the past few years.
Sell it, honey. Cut your losses and dump the old place for whatever you can get out of it. When Mother left that place to you, she didn't do you any favors. It didn't even have a dishwasher or air conditioning. There was nothing more than a big barn of a place with drafty windows and high ceilings. And there is nothing in Banyan worth crossing the street to see. Sell it, Paris. Sell it right away.
There was a cold detachment in her mother's voice, as if the old house held no fond memories for her. I don't remember it being that bad.
I know, honey. You had a great time visiting as a little girl, but that was 30 years ago.
Her voice softened. Knowing Paris had treasured memories of her visits with her grandmother.
I remember the first time we let you stay with Mother. You were 6. I was worried you would be homesick, but you weren't. You had your suitcase and Floppy under your arm.
Who was Floppy? Paris asked with a chuckle.
Don't you remember that old brown stuffed dog you had? A cocker spaniel or some such thing?
You mean Flag. Yes, I remember.
Yes, Flag. Anyway... We dropped you off in Banyan and hoped you wouldn't cry the whole time you were there. Mother said you watched us drive down the road, then skipped off to play, never cried a tear. When we came to pick you up, you cried for hours over leaving.
They both laughed.
You had your hair braided when we got there. Something you had never had before. It looked so cute. Mother said you insisted on her braiding your hair. You said a little girl you met showed you how to braid. You were so proud you had learned to do that.
Yes, her name was Sloane.
Paris smiled at the cobweb-covered memory. I played with her every summer. We were the same age.
You insisted on wearing your hair braided for weeks after that.
I still braid my hair. French braids, Paris added.
You were such a smart little girl. You could read the newspaper by the time you were 5.
Liz hummed with a proud mother's contentment.
Now I don't have time to read the newspaper, Paris advised.
You work so hard, honey. You should take some time off.
Take a nice vacation. Go somewhere. Forget about work.
As a matter of fact, I do have 4 days off.
4 days? That isn't time off. That's a long weekend, Paris. I meant a few weeks or months. That isn't enough time to catch up on your laundry and housework.
Paris smiled to herself. Her mother must be able to see through the telephone.
Well, do something fun with your 4 days, dear, and take care of yourself, Paris. Do you hear me?
Liz had taken on the mantle of protective mother. Yes, mother, I will. Paris had learned years ago every conversation with her mother would eventually include these comments broadcast like an emotional antiseptic. It was best to nod politely and agree. They were more frequent in long-distance phone conversations than in their face-to-face meetings. It was as if Liz had trouble expressing her feelings in person, but found more profound mothering skills when there were hundreds of miles between them.
You call me next week and tell me all the things you did with your time off.
Okay, but you take care of yourself, Mother. Call if you need me.
I will. I have to go, dear. The Golden Girls is on now, and you know how I love to watch the reruns of that show. That rose just tickles the heck out of me. I love you, Paris.
I love you too, Mother. Talk to you. The line had gone dead before she could finish. Paris hung up and went to make a cup of tea. She checked her watch and decided it was too late to call Malcolm, since she hadn't fully decided what to do about the house and the repairs. Another day wouldn't matter. Chapter 2.
Good Friday morning, Dr. Demont.
Good morning, Margaret, Paris said, making her way down the hall to her office. Margaret was a short woman with a pair of glasses perpetually hung on a chain around her neck but seldom worn. She was hurrying up the hall carrying a coffee mug with cats on it and trying to sip as she walked. She had a full bouncy figure, a big nose, and a pen behind each ear. Margaret had been Paris's office manager since she started her practice 10 years ago. As loyal as a cocker spaniel, she was habitually happy and as efficient as a Cuisinart. She had accepted early in her employment that her duties were widespread. They included everything from employee management to travel agent. She followed Paris into her office. Paris exchanged her jacket for the white coat on the coat rack as Margaret placed some mail on her desk. Anything important? Paris asked, looking down at the envelopes.
Did you need car insurance for a fleet of vehicles or season tickets to NYU's music concerts? Margaret asked cheerfully.
No.
Then you don't have any mail. She smiled broadly. I, on the other hand, have tons.
Good. That's the way I like it. Delegate authority. By the way, how is Zeddy this morning? Paris felt obliged to ask about her cat since it was like a child to Margaret.
Much better, thank you. She hacked up a hairball the size of a matzah last night.
Margaret seemed proud of her cat's accomplishment, like a grandmother reporting a new addition to the family. Paris smiled, almost sorry she had asked. Good.
Did you want me to check out the details for that Squib conference in Detroit?
When is it?
July something or other, toward the end of the month,
she related. Get the particulars, then I'll decide. Last one I attended in Detroit was a lush fest. Squib pulled out when no one would attend the meetings. There is something else I need you to check on for me while you're looking up airfares, Paris said, draping her stethoscope around her neck. I need to fly to Missouri to see about my rental house.
I thought you had a property management company to handle that,
Margaret asked with a frown. I do, but I need to run out there and take a look. Can you see what you can do with my 4 days off?
Sure. Banyan, isn't it?
Yes, but you'll have to check flights to Springfield or Joplin. There's an airport in northwest Arkansas, too.
Hotel, too?
Yes, get one as close to Banyan as you can find that isn't one of those rent-by-the-hour places. Maybe a Marriott or a Sheraton.
You're scheduled for rounds Wednesday morning, right?
Margaret asked, making mental notes. Yes, Dr. Hayes is on call Tuesday night.
I'll let you know what I can find.
Margaret hurried out the door.
Dr. Demont,
Carly said, sticking her head in Paris's office.
Dr. Kraler from Boston is returning your call.
I'll take it here, Paris replied and picked up the telephone. Her day had begun, and like most days, it would be long and busy for her and her associates. Paris had carefully selected the doctors to join her practice when she realized it was growing faster than she could cover by herself. Bill Hayes was a brilliant doctor whose abilities were being wasted in a small hospital in Queens. For years, he had been stuck in the monotonous rut of paper pushing after each patient, rather than freeing himself to do what he did best, diagnose. Dr. Joseph Corelli was fresh out of the military. His gung-ho attitude camouflaged the deep concern he carried for each of his patients. They all worked well together. Bill's insight, Joe's military efficiency, and Paris's outstanding medical prowess. Margaret handled the business end of things, something Paris gladly relegated to her abilities. 3 RNs, 2 LPNs, an X-ray technician, a medical technologist for the laboratory, an insurance clerk, file clerk, and receptionist completed the staff. There were 14 employees in the practice, but everyone knew it was Paris's baby through and through. She had invested 100% of herself to make it successful, even more since Gabby's death. With steeled dedication, she put her practice above all else, as if the pain of Gabby's loss could be obscured by work ethic second to none. Now it was second nature to her. What else was there but work? Going home late and exhausted ensured Paris could sleep without lonely tears staining her pillow. 9:20 a.m., United out of LaGuardia to St. Louis, then 3:40 p.m. to Springfield. Margaret said in a quiet voice as she caught Paris in the hall between patients. Great. Hotel? Paris replied, giving the patient's chart a quick look before entering the exam room.
Still working on that? How do you feel about Coleman tents? She said with a glint in her eye.
Paris lowered her chin and gave a sideways glance.
Right. Tents are out.
Margaret continued down the hall, humming cheerfully. Paris finished her last patient at 5:30 and went to her office to take care of telephone messages and finish patient charts before calling it a day. Margaret tapped on the door and opened it.
You're all set.
She handed Paris an envelope with printouts of her e-tickets and hotel confirmation. There's a map in there for the hotel. Comfort in suites for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. You get back just before 9 Tuesday night. Rental car confirmation is with Avis. I requested something bigger than a skateboard, but no guarantees. That'll be fine. Thank you, Margaret. Give Bill the hotel number, and I'll have my cell phone with me if there's any emergency.
Don't worry about us, doctor. Just go and have a good time. Rest for a couple days.
She patted Paris on the hand.
Dr. Hayes can handle everything on this end.
I know, she said, looking through the emails in the envelope. You just never know. Her voice trailed off. Margaret saw something in her eyes that meant Paris had gone to that empty place where people go when they have lost someone close to them.
I'll tell him, she said, then smiled, and left Paris with her thoughts. Have a safe trip, she added as she closed the door.
Paris finished the charts and last details on her desk, then headed home to pack. She had her suitcase nearly filled when she realized she was packing as if she was going to a medical conference. Silk suit, wool slacks, cashmere sweater, matching shoes and accessories for each outfit was hardly what she needed for a trip to Banyan, Missouri. It was a rural town nestled in Barry County, doorstep to the Ozarks. She sat down on the bed and laughed out loud at the thought of stomping across a pasture in heels, spearing meadow muffins with each step. She emptied the suitcase and began again with slacks, Oxford shirts, a fleece pullover, a pair of sensible walking shoes, and a pair of Nikes. She set out a pair of gray slacks with a matching blazer and pink blouse to wear on the plane. She found the large envelope where she kept all her papers and receipts about the Banyan house and dropped it in her carry-on. Paris treated this trip like she did every other job, with crisp efficiency and a detailed itinerary. She would fly in, meet with Malcolm, assess the repairs, and fly back to Manhattan satisfied she had dotted every I and crossed every T. It didn't matter that she didn't know anything about home repairs. In New York City, if the sink leaked or the balusters were loose, you called the super. The only repair Paris had accomplished was the wooden silverware divider she had slipped into the kitchen drawer. She and Gabby had installed window locks in their apartment, but that was mostly Paris reading the instructions while Gabby did the installation, one step ahead of Paris's reading. It wasn't that Paris didn't know about being a handyman. It was more a lack of time to learn. Besides, Gabby did it. She could cut a board, install a shelf, or repair a lamp faster than Paris could look up a repairman in the yellow pages. She admired the way Gabby would fearlessly tackle any job. On their first Christmas together, Paris gave Gabby a leather tool belt with her initials on the buckle. The next Christmas, Gabby gave Paris a Fisher-Price toy tool belt with PD written on each of the plastic tools. God, how Paris wished Gabby was there to go with her to Banyan. She would know it needed fixing. The flight was a blur. Paris spent it reading a medical journal and leafing through the papers on the house in Banyan. She had the letter her grandmother had written explaining why she had left her Maybelline, the name her grandmother had jokingly given her large Victorian farmhouse.
Big Victorian houses are called painted ladies, Paris.
she had told the little girl on her first summer in Banyan. It's because of all the different colors of paint. It makes them look like they're wearing makeup. So I call the house Maybelline. Paris had loved the summer she spent as a child running, playing, and learning in the fresh country air. That was why her grandmother said she left it to her, to someone who loved it as much as she did. Paris's mother had never been a country girl at heart. She fled to the big city as soon as she graduated from high school. She wanted more than Banyan could offer. She wanted bright lights. She wanted a city man who worked in an office and drove a big city car, not a farmer with a pickup truck and a trailer hitch. Paris's father, Marcus DeMont, was tall, dark, and handsome. He also had a shiny new business degree from the University of Illinois. Liz West was beautiful, personable, and deeply in love. They married after only 6 weeks of courtship and against her parents' wishes. They moved to Chicago, then on to Watertown, New York, where they began an all-American picket fence dream. Paris came along 4 years later. It had been a shock to Liz how much a child interfered with her plans for husband, home, and social interaction. She had been a good mother, or as good a mother as a woman who belonged to the Women's Literary Guild, Friends of the Opera, New York Democratic Women's Society, and Welcome Wagons can be. Marcus was equally active in the community. He was coerced into running for city council and won handily. Paris was busy growing up in the presence of a babysitter. By the time she was six, her parents decided she was old enough to spend a month or two each summer with her grandmother in Banyan. Grandpa West had died when Paris was just a baby, and Grandmother West was overjoyed with the chance to spend time with her only grandchild. They developed a bond reserved for mothers and daughters. The winter after Paris's 14th birthday, Grandmother West had a stroke and a wicked fall that shattered her hip. The realization that she would live out her years in a nursing home was like a knife through Paris's heart. It was far more than just losing a place to go every summer. It was losing her pal, her confidant, her mentor, her friend. Grandmother West said in the letter that she was confident Paris understood what was important about the house and the acreage. Maybelline is in your soul, Paris. It isn't the house. It's the way of life. Never give it up. Never forget how it makes you feel. Paris closed the letter and slipped it back in the envelope. Sometimes she wished Grandmother hadn't given her the house. Sometimes she wished she didn't feel so attached to it. Perhaps everyone was right. Perhaps she should just sell it and be done with it. Let someone else have the headaches of keeping up an old 10-room Victorian farmhouse. Paris leaned back against the headrest and closed her eyes. Paris claimed her luggage at the Springfield Airport and checked in at the Avis rental counter. All the sedans were checked out. If she wanted a large vehicle, the lady behind the counter suggested a pickup truck or an SUV. Paris settled for an economy coupe with an automatic transmission, a radio with limited range, and a moonroof that didn't open. She headed west on US 44 to State Highway 39 South. The first thing Paris noticed was the traffic, or the lack of it. She reminded herself this was Missouri, not New York City. It took just over an hour for Paris to make it to Banyan and the road to her grandmother's house. She slowed to a crawl as she pulled into the drive that led around the house and stopped at the back porch. The house had been painted white with yellow shutters. The multicolored trim that Paris remembered from her childhood was all the same color. The front porch still stretched around the corner with pilasters and fretwork at the top, but it looked tacky and in need of repair. The frames around the tall living room and dining room windows needed painting. The rose garden outside the kitchen window was long gone, replaced by a picnic table and dilapidated barbecue grill. She tried her key in the front door, but it didn't open. She walked around to the back door and tried it in the lock, but it didn't work there either. She peered in the back door, but all she could see was the mudroom wall. She frowned with disappointment and took out her cell phone. She punched in Malcolm's office number and left a message for him to call her. She tried the key in the front door one more time. "Damn," she muttered and gave it a shove. She walked across the yard to the pasture gate and looked down the slope. One thing hadn't changed. The pond was still there, and so was a big weeping willow tree standing majestically on the little island. There was a new bridge over to the island. It was bright white with whimsical Victorian railings on either side of the arched walkway. The view of her island and the tree instantly brought a smile to her face, and a flood of memories. It was just as she remembered it. The moments and events of her childhood settled over her like flower petals, soft and pleasing to the senses.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?